Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacey Topp. I lost 135 pounds and drastically improved my whole family's health adopting a paleo lifestyle. My husband Matt, who happens to be the producer of this podcast, and I blog our recipes, successes, and struggles at paleoparents.com. Matt and I have authored two cookbooks, Eat Like a Dinosaur, a family-friendly recipe and guidebook for kids, and the upcoming Beyond Bacon, which is a paleo recipe book respecting the whole hog, nose to tail, due out in hardback July 2nd, 2013. We have a passion for family-friendly meals that are practical, affordable, and sustainable to the earth, as well as our long-term health.
And I'm Sarah Ballantyne. I was a scientist before becoming a full-time stay-at-home mom and the blogger behind thepaleomom.com. I'm also the author of the upcoming book, The Paleo Approach, available for pre-order now off Amazon and due out September 28th, 2013. Both my blog and The Paleo Approach are heavily focused on the autoimmune protocol. I also blog about the practical application of the paleo diet and share wonderful recipes.
Next up, News and Views, where Sarah and I catch up and you get to listen to our gossip. So this week on the Paleo View, as if last week's special guest Jill Salatin wasn't awesome enough, this week we have some of my buds from the Paleo online community joining us for what we're affectionately deeming our Web Liberty podcast. I love calling people Web Liberties, and it's 99% mockery of feeling completely ridiculous when I personally get recognized in public. So I don't know how you guys feel about that, but joining us today, we have Bill and Haley from the Food Lover's Primal Palette. Hi, guys.
Hey. Hello.
We have Danielle from Against All Grain, who I think is our, not I think, I'm positive we've determined our most frequented guest, and we can never have enough of Danielle. So welcome back.
Thank you.
And new to our show, we have Russ from The Domestic Man, who's actually pretty local to us, and Russ really should be on the show more often, but we don't really like boys on the show that much. So welcome, Russ, the rare occasion for
hi everyone.
and I'm here too.
Yeah.
So yeah, Sarah. I don't know. In case you thought I was disappeared or something.
Sarah and I have also. Yeah, we've talked about like alternating hosting the show, and it just would be awful.
We can't. We're not. We're only good as a team. I don't think we could. Yeah. I don't think we could do trade-off shows.
So, no. Bill and Haley, what do you guys have going on?
The usual. Working on wedding plans. We're getting married at the end of August.
Congratulations.
Thanks. Yeah, that's the current exciting stuff.
I just stamped 100 bags for our cookie table with our stamp, literally.
Your grain-free cookie table.
Yeah. For anyone that doesn't know, we had two books that came out this spring, Gather and The 30-Day Guide to Paleo Cooking. So those are out in the wild, and we're happy and we're excited that people are enjoying those. And what else? We got a puppy this spring. His name is Charlie. I think everyone knows that. Probably more people know about that than our books.
I think you Instagram your puppy certainly more than you Instagram your books.
Yeah, if you want to follow Charlie, our dog, on Instagram, he's at Chuck Dickens. No, but seriously, life's good. We're really happy. It's summer, and really looking forward to the wedding, and that's the most important, most fun thing right now. So
I can't believe you guys aren't already married. Like, it just, having known you for years.
We pretty much are. We've been talking about it. Like, we're so excited for our wedding, and then we're like, then we're going to be married. That's boring.
Make no mistake, people. This is just a formality.
Yeah, totally.
It's just an excuse to have a party.
It's a good excuse.
Danielle, yeah. I think you got some exciting news today. What are you up to? What do you want to share?
I have an advanced copy of my book coming tomorrow morning.
Yay. Oh, cool.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, we're heading to Tahoe, and like we were going to leave at 10, and Michelle said the other day, she's like, well, it'll either be there on Friday or Monday. So I called her today and I'm like, do you know when yet? Because if I leave at 10 a.m. on Friday and it comes like Friday afternoon and I'm gone for 2 days and it's just sitting on my doorstep, I was like, it will drive me crazy. So early delivery, 8:30 a.m. tomorrow morning. So I'm nice. Super excited to see it. I'm actually extremely nervous as well, but I'm excited.
It'll be beautiful.
My book is called Against All Grain, same as my website, againstallgrain.com. There's, I think, 160 recipes. I should know that by now. And they're grain and dairy free, and it's kind of everything from breakfast to desserts to beverages. It's kind of my first book, just comprehensive paleo recipes.
And it's also SCD friendly, because that's how you started into paleo, right?
Yes. Yeah. There are recipes in there that are not SCD friendly, but they're categorized as such. So, and the majority of them are SCD friendly.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm planning a book tour, which I think is going to probably drive me to being crazy on top of everything else, but I'm doing it. So
I'm excited for you, but
yeah,
Bill and Haley and I, well, I won't speak for you guys cause you're not old and crusty like I am. Book tour is just, there's no way.
Yeah. Yeah. we were going to try and travel a little bit this summer, and then we ended up moving and with the wedding and we're getting married, and yeah. It's just like there's no way.
Yeah.
We won't be going to AHS either, just because that's our wedding month, and I feel like if we show up at AHS, even if we could like make ourselves do it, people would be like, why are you here? Like, how can you be here? You're getting married at the end of the month.
Yeah. Just hang on to those copies, people. We'll see you when we see you.
They're not going anywhere.
And actually you guys, and Russ will be here in the Washington DC area for our book release party on July 5th. So if you have Bill and Haley's books, they will be here and they will sign your books for you.
That's right. You know, there are some details about that event today that were leaked on the internet. I don't know if anyone's heard, but there's going to be lard fries.
I told Bill, he didn't see your post, and he was like, I was like, Bill, you're going to be really excited because there's going to be lard fries. And he was like, yes.
Yeah. I can imagine Bill's eyes just like popping out of his head with excitement.
That's great. Yeah. Those would be awesome.
Nothing really makes him happier than lard fries.
Yeah. Lard fries and hard cider and ginger beer, and they make their own sausages and hot dogs and bratwurst and that's sauerkraut. Awesome. It's a legit place. So we're super excited. And they render their own lard and make their own pork stock from local pastured pigs. And they are going to be stocked up for people so that when they get their book, they can grab their lard if they don't want to render it themselves and be ready to go. So,
my goodness.
We're really looking forward to it. I cannot wait for this party.
Yeah, I'm so bummed I'm missing. It's going to be like a Paleo FX reunion.
Except I'm going to be there.
Yeah. Shoot. Well,
I'll meet you sometime,
see you guys,
Danielle.
All. I know. I'll be seeing you. Where do you live again?
Atlanta.
I'll be there. You'll see her at AHS.
Yeah,
yeah.
AHS.
I'll be there.
Yeah. I'm giving a 40-minute talk at AHS. So
perfect.
Wow. I like have to. I know. Huh. I don't know how I got that.
It's a real talk.
It's a real talk. Yeah. And what's cool is they actually approached me. I'd had no idea that you had to submit abstracts and stuff like that. So I feel very special. Yeah, I'm excited.
That's a pretty big deal.
Can I say one more thing really fast?
Yeah.
I'm also giving away a trip to San Francisco to my book launch party. So anyone that's listening that wants to travel, please go to my site and make sure that you enter.
That's cool. Or don't, because then you lessen my chances of winning.
Yeah, Stacey. I'm going to rig it so Stacey can win and come out. Just like, kidding.
Dear employer, I know I already have a ton of stuff going on, but I won this trip to San Francisco, so I have to go.
Yeah.
So, Russ, we didn't get a chance. Why don't you, because you've never been on the show before.
I haven't.
Maybe say just a little bit about like your background and what you have going on.
Okay, so my name's Russ. I blog at thedomesticman.com. I mostly focus on traditional foods. So my whole thing is I don't like reinventing stuff. I feel like we can probably find everything already since we've been cooking for thousands and tens of thousands of years already. So that's kind of my shtick. But I don't really have any big things going on other than I just post a new recipe every week. I guess, well, I am speaking at AHS doing a 20-minute talk, so nice. I'm working on that too, I guess.
So. Russ is being so modest. He was Russ, your blog is one of the most beautiful blogs I've ever seen.
And didn't you either get nominated or win a Savour award? I can't even say that.
Yeah, I was nominated for a Savour food blog award for this year, which was pretty cool. Actually, just on Tuesday, I went up to New York City and went to like a Savour barbecue thing. They invited me as like a VIP or whatever.
They just invited me as VIP. Yeah, it was no big deal.
It was pretty cool, but the problem was that half of it was like bread. I kind of left hungry, but oh well.
And probably really good bread, though, too.
Yeah, it looked really good.
No, it was awful. Let's not talk to our listeners about that. Right. I'm sure it was moldy. It was awful. It smelled bad. And it probably tasted even worse, right, Russ?
Exactly. Whoa. Right. Yep. I saw. I mean, everyone was just getting sick. You know.
I had something to say. Oh, and your background, like Danielle, comes from SED. You actually focus more kind of perfect health diet, kind of where a lot of paleo people are going today, including good quality, full fat dairy, white rice, and potatoes in your meals. Yep. So if people are down with that, Russ is your man. He's got famed paleo pizza recipe on his website. Oh. Like if you've seen a stunning photo for paleo pizza and been like, that needs to get my belly, I can guarantee you it was Russ's photo.
Yeah, I got a chicken nuggets once, pretty good too. So those are my two. It's funny. Those are two I just threw together and they get the most attention, believe it or not. So.
I think instead of trying, like, making all of your recipes, I'd rather have you guys make them for me.
Yes.
like when we had Danielle's granola at PaleoFX, I was like, this is great. Amazing. I don't want to make it for
exactly.
myself.
Like, can you just ship this to me? Maybe we should start, like, a cookie exchange. It doesn't have to be cookies. But you know how, like, back in the day, I don't know, maybe 10, 20 years ago, people used to do like cookie exchanges where they would make cookies and then they would share it with other people or they would send it to other people. So you made like four batches of your cookies and then you sent it to four of your closest friends and then you received four batches of different cookies. Like that's what we need.
Like that.
I want Danielle's granola and I want Jenny's everything. Jenny.
Yeah.
Jenny from the Urban Poser, everything she posts, I'm like, that doesn't even look real. It's so good.
Yeah,
we should totally do that.
We could do that in August, and you guys can just do it with us, and we won't.
Send us cookies.
we're bringing cookies for your grain-free cookie table, or was I instructed to bring marshmallows? I forget. I'm supposed to bring something.
I don't know. Whatever you bring will be appreciated.
I think it was cake balls. You like emailed me whatever it was and you were like, this needs to be on my cookie table.
Like, oh yeah. I forget what that was, but it looked really good.
You're making me hungry.
That's not hard, Bill. Starving. You're always hungry.
Yeah.
Well, we had shrimp for dinner and it was like portion control size shrimp. It was awful.
You never get enough.
Yeah. Should have had a steak.
Or pork chop.
Yeah, or a pork chop.
There you go.
You could have a perfect pork chop from Beyond Bacon and it would be even better than steak.
Yeah.
So we're supposed to talk about a little bit about the book. You guys tested recipes. What did everybody test? What did you like? What did you make?
I'll start. So I did two different ones. I tested the kebabs, the pork kebabs, and then I tested the cracklin pork belly, and they were both really good. I think we liked the pork belly better.
Did
and then
you
just
even
this
get a
past
bite
week,
of that because you brought that to the potluck, right?
Yeah, actually, I made it for the potluck. So, yeah, and then. We just this past weekend, I made the corn dogs. I made mini corn dogs out of them, and that was really fun. And I think the use of turmeric was perfect. You know, like it was a perfect color, and it didn't impart like a really turmeric-y taste or anything either. So it was a good amount.
Thanks. I read your review post today, and I got a little misty-eyed. It was really, really genuine and heartfelt, and you said a lot of nice things. So thank you, Russ.
Oh, you're welcome. It's a beautiful book.
Thank you. I'm a little pile of mush. Bill and Haley, you guys have been so busy. Did you taste anything, test anything? Because I know Sarah tested like the entire book. I don't know if you guys saw her post. She actually tested the entire book.
So. No, I'm not going to lie.
Okay, so I kind of just got that feeling like I didn't do my homework and everyone was getting like pop quizzed on it. And, you know, like, what did you learn from chapter 6 and blah, blah, blah book? We, when we got the book, we were then moving and then we had Sean and Suzanne in for a week. And I don't know why we didn't think to make something with them. That would have been like perfect timing. So dumb of us.
Hold on, though. We did try some things for the book when we were there.
Yeah, we had the ice cream, which everything we tried was insane. The carrots.
Stacey, was that in the fall when we came for Gather that we tried some?
No, it was that was for the Balance Bite seminar.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was in the spring.
Yeah.
It wasn't too long ago. Yeah.
We had the carrots. We had the...
You had the rosemary and carrot mash. You had the best brownies. Mm-hmm. And
yes.
Did you try
ice cream.
Both of the ice creams or just one?
Both.
Did the one ice cream have prosciutto in it?
One is roasted peach and prosciutto, and then the other one is maple.
I remember those. I think those were really good.
I think we tried both of them. I really want to make the piggy pot pie.
Mm.
That looks really good.
The biscuits are way better than they should be for grain-free. Like, I don't know how Matt pulled that off. But just, frankly, anything with lard, it's like magic.
Lard is magic. How did we drift away from using lard? Because it's the best.
Some idiot that invented trans fats tried to convince us otherwise.
Yeah.
Lame.
So
we've tried stuff. We will be making stuff probably in the next couple weeks here because you're getting close. When's the release date? Like next week?
Tuesday. Yeah, July 2nd. This podcast is going to go live on July 2nd.
Okay, so we're going to be making stuff this weekend.
So if you're listening to this podcast today, you should go to primalpalette.com and you should look and see what Bill and Haley made.
We'll do it.
Maybe we'll be going to Whole Foods after this podcast.
And Danielle, I saw a picture of what you made.
I did. I made the best brownies. That was like, I have such a sweet tooth. So I flip like almost straight to the back where the dessert section with every book that I get. They were so good. And I want to make so much more. I text Stacey today and was like, I've only had time to make one recipe. Am I still going to be of value to you? But my review goes up tomorrow and I'm giving away a copy too. So hopefully I'll redeem myself.
Yeah, and Russ, will your giveaway still be live on Tuesday?
No, it ends on Saturday night. I like to keep mine pretty short.
So everybody listening, you just missed out if you weren't already following Russ, which is why you should have been following him to begin with.
Exactly. And it was a signed copy, too.
I will be actually starting a giveaway on Saturday, so it'll still be live when this airs for a signed copy of Beyond Bacon, and I am actually bringing it with me to Virginia to get Matt and Stacey to sign it in person and then bringing it home with me. So so if anybody wants that signed copy, they can go enter on Danielle's blog and then go enter on my blog and increase your chances of winning.
Hardcore.
That sounded like a really good idea. We're going to do the same thing. We're going to bring a copy. We'll get it signed. We'll give it away on our blog. So look for
that. Right.
And the cool thing is Amy will be there too. So you'll have the trifecta of authors, which is what Russ is giving away too. So.
Yeah.
Because the book would not be what the book is without Amy Buxton, our amazing photographer. So
She's very, very talented.
Yeah, it's incredible.
She did such a good job with this.
Yeah, she's awesome.
That's high praise coming from Bill, because Bill, you are like an awesome photographer too.
I remember when Bill, when you guys got the copy, or whether it was a PDF version or whatever it was, and you posted on your personal Facebook page that it was beautiful, Amy freaked out, and she was like, because it's not true until Bill Staley says so.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah. I was like, what am I, chopped liver? And someone said, isn't that a compliment?
That's such a paleo joke.
That is such a paleo joke.
it's a work of art.
It is.
And there's several very good food photographers on this podcast with us. I'm not the only one.
Yeah. so I've been trying to convince her to try to find more inanimate object clients because she's realized that working with people is just not her favorite. She's really good with babies, and now I've convinced her she's good with inanimate objects. I'm like, just, you know, they won't talk back to you. They're not intimidating. They'll just sit there on the table and
they don't move. And,
yep.
Yeah. I definitely feel her pain because I've done like a million weddings, makeup for weddings, and it's hard to work with people. So I feel her pain.
Yeah.
Speaking of inanimate objects, I will say that the best food photography gig that I had was actually not for our own stuff, but for Jill's book Fermented, because there's not even a heat involved with the food. It's just in a jar.
It's in a jar.
That was really easy.
Yeah. Oh, well, for the glares.
Yeah. And they all look great though, Bill.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks. No, the glares were really hard. You're right. I mean, it was like, oh crap, how much of this am I photoshopping out? And then I was like, none of it.
Yeah, so. That book is awesome looking now.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
I have to admit, I am like the worst at things that are alive. Like, we've killed cactus before. If my children didn't water and feed themselves when they were hungry, like, I don't know that we could have made it this far. You know, like, so the idea of fermented foods and kombucha and things that, like, things happen to them if you don't do things to them at the right time. We totally fail at that. I don't know what's wrong. Whenever I see Russ, I'm like, please, please bring me some kombucha. And Amy always brings me, well, not always. If I beg her, she'll bring me sauerkraut because I'm just terrible at it. So I'm hoping that maybe Jill's book takes the fear of keeping these things alive away from me enough to maybe give it a try. But
yeah, I don't know. There's like something magical about Jill because her scobies are like, they're like little angel scobies. They're like, they're so perfect. I've grown a scoby and it does not look like her scobies. Hers are like just perfect.
So you're going to bring me one next week. You're going to,
you're
going to bring me a little Jill scoby. A little angel scoby.
You know, it's probably top secret at this point, but I don't think she'll mind if I say. For her book release party in August for Fermented, she's going to send everyone home with scobies.
Nice.
That's awesome.
That's a good idea.
I don't want to wait till August, though.
Yeah, we'll bring you one.
No, I'll bring you one. Yeah.
And I'll try not to kill it, but I can't make any guarantees. So, can I ask you guys a question, a Beyond Bacon question? Did anybody actually render their own lard? And now it really is a pop quiz, and like pointing my finger at everybody. Or how, if you didn't, where or how did you procure your lard? Because I know they're in the brownies. Well, I know Sarah made her own lard, but that's nothing.
Oh, I've been making my own lard
for like decades.
Yeah. Well, not decades, but months anyways. So,
We actually have lard that we – or not lard. We have fat in our freezer somewhere that we got from our co-op and never did anything with it. So we need to make your lard for sure.
That's in our freezer?
Yeah.
We need a whiteboard for that thing.
Yeah. That's an awesome idea.
Yeah, you got to have like a library system, like check in, check out dates. Yep. Like, how long has this been in here? I don't know. It's frozen.
So I have a very good friend whose name I won't reveal, but her husband listens to this podcast and he's dying laughing right now, knowing exactly what I'm about to say. I tease them that they're meat hoarders only because we're meat hoarders too. Like we have a problem whenever meat goes on sale. Like I buy it. I don't know if it's some sort of biological problem that I have. And I'm sure it's related to being overweight. Like I'm a food hoarder and now I've become a meat hoarder. And so anyway, this woman and I joke with one another that we're meat hoarders. And, I had no idea how real her problem was until I went to her home and I realized that she had multiple deep freezes in her kitchen, in her garage, like multiple deep freezes in order to accommodate all of her meat. But the genius of it is that she keeps an inventory sheet on the front of her freezer so that although she can't see it all because it's going so deep and it's in multiple freezers, she knows that she's got two lamb shakes and a pork shoulder because it's on an inventory sheet. How awesome is that?
Awesome.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. You, like, I mean, we don't even have ours half full, and I still want to have something like that just to know.
Just to know what's in there, yeah.
Yeah.
So my wife, a wine inventory website.
My wife and I, we have a shared Google Drive document where it's an Excel spreadsheet, and we have everything mapped out of what we store in the freezer and where it came from and how many pounds it is.
Yeah.
So I have an upright freezer. So it's not a deep freezer. It's the size of or slightly bigger than a fridge. Mm-hmm. And the reason why, when I was looking for freezers, the reason why I wanted this was from working in medical research labs where you freeze a lot of stuff and keep a lot of stuff frozen. And the difference between working in a deep freeze and working in an upright freezer is like completely night and day. So I have like shelves and boxes. And it's like, I have like the box that is the ground pork box, which is sadly empty right now, but I'm getting another half pig on Saturday. Cause I also am a meat hoarder. Cause I'm like, oh no, I used my last ground pork on Tuesday. Time for another half pig.
At least people who are listening who also have this problem feel a little better.
Yeah. If anybody's shopping for a freezer, you sort of pay a more upfront for an upright freezer. But it has it has about the same square footage, and it's much easier to organize. You don't have to kind of like dig into it. You just kind of – it's like a fridge, right? Like that's as far deep as you go is sort of the back of the fridge. So I've just thrown out there that I like my upright freezer.
Yeah. So going back to the lard part. So in our area of the world, it's pretty easy to get a hold of pretty good lard. So we have a local farmer that makes lard for us. But I have rendered it before, but sometimes it's harder to find the fat than it is just to go and get the lard from the farmer. So that's usually what I do.
Danielle, what did you do for the brownies? Am I calling you out? You used butter, didn't you?
Totally are. I used unsalted butter.
I can feel you sweating from across
I was
going
to do the scones. Well, so I went to the store. I was like, there's no way I'm going to have time to do this right now. So I was going to go buy it. And I went, I didn't go to Whole Foods. I went to just like another one of our local health food stores. And they had it, but it had a bunch of additives in it. And so I just went home and used butter, and they were incredibly delicious, which I'm sure means that they'll be even better when I actually make them to the recipe next time.
So the reason
I'll send you granola, you send me lard. How about that?
I can't do it in the summertime. That would be really
yeah, that's
gross.
True.
You come here, I'll hook you up with lard.
Perfect.
So the reason I asked is because I knew that Danielle hadn't rendered her own lard. And I wanted to just, like, you know, point out to people that, like most solid fats, almost all of the recipes are adaptable to use a different kind of fat if you want to. For deep frying, I think we give the alternative of coconut oil. And in a lot of the recipes, palm shortening or butter would work. There's one in particular that Danielle asked me about that she wanted to make the scones. And I know just from having tested them with palm shortening when once we ran out of lard that they tasted awful. Like having had them with lard, then when I tasted them with palm shortening, I was like, Matt, what's wrong with these scones? And he's like, I made them with palm shortening. I'm like, don't ever do that again. It's like really
awful. You mean like when you asked me why my soup was weird?
Yes.
It was
you should totally tell that story.
Chicken stock.
So when Stacy and Amy came to visit us for our book release party for Gather.
Excuse you, Charlie. Jeez. I hope that didn't get picked up.
You're going to blame that on the dog?
That was loud.
Oh, my God.
It was too loud to ignore. We've ignored a few already.
Okay.
Thanks,
I hope I can say little side note. I think I can say this on air. I think I can. Charlie is chewing on a beef penis right now, and he just.
Oh, my dog loved those.
Oh my gosh, we're such paleo dorks.
Yeah. Hey, this is long before paleo. That was my dog's favorite treat.
Apparently,
I have a dog, and I've never heard of that before.
No, they're sperm forks, not actually the whole.
Yeah, they're called pizzles.
the ones we bought when we were kids were labeled beef sperm cord. So,
wow. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, they weren't labeled anything friendly like pizzles.
Now they're pizzles, but that makes a little more sense because my mom saw it. She was like, this is small, those poor cows. But, I don't know. whatever. So Stacy and Amy came to visit us, and I had just made a big batch of our Italian wedding soup from our 30-day guide, which is really, really yummy. So we were having lunch, and I asked Stacy and Amy if they wanted some soup, and Stacy's like taking a couple bites.
Stacy being a connoisseur of soup that has soup every single day.
And I think I made the broth with some chicken backs, and she's like taking a couple bites, not really saying anything. Amy's like, "This soup is really good." Finally, Amy's like, "What's weird about this soup?" Or Stacy's like, "What's different about this soup? Something's not right. Did you use chicken broth?" And I was like, "Yes."
I'm pretty sure the tone of my voice says, "Did you use chicken broth?"
Do you never have chicken broth, Stacy?
I mean, when we make whole chickens, we make broth, but we've just kind of become anti-chicken. Like, it's very expensive comparatively to the other meats that we eat.
Yeah.
So we rarely have chicken stock. And because you can't get a very good gelatinous without the feet, like, we actually usually put other bones in with it. Like, if we do a whole chicken carcass, then we'll throw a trotter in with it, just because it helps with the collagen and all that sort of stuff to congeal it a little more. So I don't think I'd had true chicken stock in like a year. I don't know. I really didn't mean to be disrespectful, but like, it occurred to me at the minute that I started talking, I was like, "Oh, that's what's different about this soup." Like, it was made with a chicken.
Yeah. I think chicken stock just has like a special place in my heart because my, I kind of like grew up on it. My grandmother, Grandy Kipp's chicken soup, was actually her grandmother's chicken soup recipe. And my great, great grandmother would use like a whole chicken. And, you know, anytime I was sick, I had to have chicken soup because it's, yeah, Jewish penicillin. And I don't know. I love chicken broth. So I like using it. I actually don't think I've had pork broth. So that's another thing we'll have to make.
Yeah.
Amy pretty much smacked me upside the head and said I was completely wrong and that chicken stock is better. She totally had your back.
Thanks, Amy.
I love it. I don't know. It's just comforting.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, so if you guys make lard or stock or any of like the cured meats, like, Bill, you would be awesome at making pancetta. I could see you like rocking that.
You know, it's funny. We when did we get that ham? Like 9 months ago. I alluded to this really ambitious food project. I was actually thinking about making my own prosciutto, and the curing process is like an 18-month minimum.
Yeah, you would be halfway done by now if you had started then.
Yeah, I mean, you really commit to it, and I've read a lot about you know, making your own charcuterie and cured meats, and it's, you know, it's not for the faint of heart. It's you know, things can go wrong. And of course, you know, I do a lot of research putting a 20-pound ham in the basement for almost 2 years. But
but it would be really good when you opened it up.
Yeah, I've thought about it. I really have. I mean, we have a meat slicer, so there's a check there. And we have a ham, so there's a check there. But
when Bill makes things, they're usually very involved and
I'm all
in.
A lot of
research.
Yeah, I'm all in when I go after something. Like that General Tso's chicken, like I'm still working on that recipe. Yeah. I'm still working on it. But
yeah, yep. We chose to only do the bacon and the pancetta because they had 1 week lead times, and we just felt like anything longer than that, like all the other cured meats that we had looked at and thought about, we wanted to do a spiral. What do they call, like, the honey-baked hams, but that's not what they call Whatever that is, you have to cure it for, I think Matt said, 3 months. And we just felt like it would be useless to have to – we could do the recipe, but I don't think anybody's going to make it. You know, anybody who wants to do a project like that is going to do some serious research online. So we just thought, you know, a one-week project in a book is enough to kind of get someone who's maybe on the tip of thinking about trying, like, hey, I can do this for 1 week, and then – then if they're successful and they want to go on to do prosciutto, I don't feel guilty for wasting an entire pig leg for them if it goes wrong, you know?
Like, yeah.
Also, the great thing about prosciutto is that it's almost 9 times out of 10 when you buy it from the store, it's only cured with salt anyway.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
Yeah, I read a lot about the process. We can all chat about it next week at the party, but it's nice. it's pretty interesting to say the least. I mean, it's just I'm scared.
Well, I'll tell you, when we pulled the first pancetta out of our basement closet, and Matt brought it upstairs, and Amy was here because we were going to slice into it and have her take pictures like as it was happening. Amy like stood back. She didn't want to get near it, and she was convinced that we had had food rotting in the basement for a week. She was just like, "I don't trust you guys." But it was really exciting when it works out.
Yeah, it's such an intimidating process, you know, because you think about it, there's people who make that's their life's work, you know, is some of these hams and stuff and cured meats, and then we're like, well, I don't know, can I just knock it out in my basement, or am I going to let the experts do it, you know?
Yeah.
So,
and once you start getting into prosciutto, that's like $20, $30 a pound, it's like, I might try this.
That's true.
I'm actually going to get uncured pork belly and bacon with my pig. So I was thinking about trying to make my own bacon this time. Last time I cooked it up, not realizing it was uncured. That was a disappointment. Uncured bacon is not the same thing.
It's really not.
No, we've done that too.
It's like a chewy piece of ham.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Is there anything else that I want to talk about the book?
I want to ask you a question. Can I interview you for a second?
Yeah.
I want to talk about one of the dishes on the cover. Tell me about the corn dogs. Those look awesome.
So Russ made the corn dogs. And the thing about the corn dogs is we had made the sweet and sour pork recipe. And we had done research on what kind of batter we wanted to use. And tested a couple of things to get it just right when we fried up the sweet and sour pork. And we had leftover batter. And Matt was like, you know what this would be really good on? You know, when you just have like one of those moments. And I was like, wait, we can't just use like the exact same batter. It's not going to look like a corn dog. And so I went to the cabinet and I grabbed turmeric, which is one of the things that we had. And I had just had a podcast with Sarah, like, I don't know, it must have been 6 months ago, about the health benefits of turmeric. So I was like, let's just add some of this in here and it'll make it be yellow and it has health benefits. And Matt's like, you're such a genius. And that's the story of corn dogs. It took us a while to actually figure it out because the batter doesn't stick to the hot dog. So when we tried to dip it and we tried to then fry it, and we realized it wasn't working, we actually did some research on how just regular corn dogs are made in order to figure out how we needed to make our corn dogs stick to the thing. So,
what was the secret?
You have to get the book to find out.
I'm flipping to the page. I'm trying to find out now.
It worked for you though, Russ. Shoot. I saw your pictures and it's...
Yeah, I had no problem with it getting the stick. The only issue is that mine didn't look so round. And I mean, I just used mine in a cast iron skillet and I didn't have enough lard to really cover the whole thing.
Yeah.
And so it just kind of looks kind of like alien-esque in my pictures. But
and yours
it still
were minis.
Great.
They weren't like on a stick either.
Right. I didn't have anything to spin with, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, people, I know the secret. Step 6 on page 186. You better get the book. I know the secret. I won't tell you.
I've already given away the secret ingredient to how it looks like corn dog.
Yep.
Yeah. Any other questions? See, that's much more... That makes me feel much less uncomfortable than like, me talking about my own book. Like, I'm kind of...
Hey. You deserve to talk about it. You guys worked so hard on it.
What was the recipe that was the hardest to get? Like,
well, that's a good question.
The pie crust, for sure.
Pie crust.
That's funny, as you said that, I was just flipping across the page.
That's like the holy grail for people making desserts. I mean, a really good pie crust.
The pie crust and the biscuits, not surprisingly, were the toughest. And ultimately, it just comes down to the same factors that it comes down to with making good regular pie crust. You know, grain-free or not, you need cold. And so we just had to make sure that we were getting our lard cold enough. Once we got the proportions and the ratios figured out, getting it to roll and look like a regular pie crust was was the trick. And we give some instructions in there that I haven't necessarily seen other people give about how to do a grain-free pie crust so that it actually forms properly. I know, Haley and Danielle, I've seen your pictures and yours are beautiful as well. And there are some tricks that people can use. It's not just a matter of like being a genius in the kitchen. There are some things that you can do to help your pie crust look a little better. So, but yeah, that, I think we did that recipe 18 times.
Oh my gosh. Crazy.
Love pie crust.
Yeah, it was a lot of pie crust. And the picture of the apple pie was actually the very first photo shoot that we did. We only kept two photos from that first day of shooting, and I think we shot something like 10 foods that day. But the apple pie is one of the first, and we made it. And this is such like insider scoop. When we made that pie crust, we had actually used burned lard, but we didn't want to waste the lard. And so we knew that it would photograph okay. And so we were using the burned lard on that pie crust and did it for the photo. And then Amy didn't realize, and we forgot to tell her that like it's not going to taste very good.
Oh no!
Because the lard had been burned, and that just, it ruins everything. And that we go into detail in the book about like making sure that you're using non-burned lard because it'll ruin everything that you cook with if you burn your lard. So Amy goes to take a bite of the pie crust, and I just see the look on her face as the first day of shooting. We're totally awkward with one another. We like, I feel like I need to tell her exactly because I did almost, you know, most of the styling and most of the take it from this angle and blah, blah, blah. It really was like a balance between Amy and I. It wasn't just like Amy doing everything. And so there were a few points where I wanted to be like, no, I don't really want it shot like that. I want it shot from above, or I want it shot from the side, or, you know, I want a different color background. And we weren't quite in a groove for me to just like tell her those things without her feeling comfortable or uncomfortable with it. And so she was also in a place where she wasn't in a groove of being able to tell us that something tasted bad. Because she's tasting this pie, and I know for a fact that it's burned, and she's eating it, and she's like, yep, okay.
She's like, what kind of a project did I sign on?
Exactly, exactly. So every time I see the picture of that pie crust, I think of like what a catastrophe that day was. And it ended up all right. We figured out the pie crust in the end, and that was one of the few usable shots from that day, so...
Oh boy. Well, it's a nice shot. I actually really appreciate the attention to detail with the layered apples in the, in the pie. It looks good.
Thanks.
Looks good.
Yeah.
There's nothing like putting bacon on an apple pie. Like, I'm telling you, someone brought that pie to the potluck last week, and I didn't realize when she brought in an apple pie that it was our recipe, because I'm an idiot and there's so many recipes in the book, and I just assumed it was like somebody else's apple pie recipe because I forget that we have one. And so this big potluck we have, and everybody eats food, and then it gets time for dessert, and the person that brought it is like, oh, I want to taste the apple pie. And I'm like, oh, apple pie, that's amazing, let's go get some. And she's like, Stacey, it's your recipe. I was like, oh. And then I got really nervous because apple pie is one of those things, like, it can't be too runny or else you ruin the pie crust. And if the pie crust is not good, then the whole thing falls apart when you try to cut it. And I was like, oh my gosh, I don't want to try to cut into my own pie and have it be a catastrophe. But it sliced up perfectly. And I like went around and showed everyone on the plate. And I was like, this is the first piece. And look, it stayed together. And it's so awesome. And this is my recipe. You should eat some. It was really pathetic. You were there for that, Russ, right?
Yep.
Do you remember
it was
me?
Good. I tried some of the pie. It was good.
Do you remember me being an idiot?
I missed that part of it. I think. Different room. So I have a whole different view of you now.
I don't know. You've seen quite enough of me to probably get a pretty good assessment.
There is a story behind every recipe.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. It either comes together like on a whim, like some of the ones that we've mentioned where, you know, it's like you just do it and all of a sudden you've got this amazing thing and you hope that you wrote it down right there. Yeah. Or it takes you 18 times and it's nothing but problems. You know, it's usually nothing in between when it comes to recipes. So
totally.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. And you can hear our enthusiasm about that.
But it's those ones that take 18 times that are the ones that are the most appreciated, because they tend to be the most unique recipes, because not a lot of people are going to sit and, you know, fiddle with, oh, do I need to, you know, increase the almond flour by 2 extra tablespoons this time? And do I need to, you know, decrease the baking soda? And that those little tiny iterations that are what get those recipes right is what makes those recipes that take so much effort so special for people. It's what makes, you know, all of the books that we're all working on, like, really important, because not everybody has that kind of patience or ability to go through gallons and gallons of ingredients in their kitchens.
Speaking of going through gallons and gallons, I made my pumpkin donuts today, and I had them sitting on the counter when I went up to go get ready, and my dog ate all 14 of them. All 14. I was like, oh, there's 5 eggs down the drain and almond flour and coconut flour. I was just like thinking in my head all the ingredients that I lost, not to mention that I didn't get to eat any of them.
Yikes.
That sucks. Yeah.
I've caught my cat eating my chicken liver mousse before, but that's the and bacon. Those are the only things that I've caught my cat eating.
Luckily, our dog can't get up on anything.
I was going to say, yeah, you guys have a small enough dog. You don't have to worry about it.
But he started chewing on furniture, which is nice.
Furniture is more expensive than ingredients.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
No, he's not teething. He's 8 months old. He's just being a jerk.
He just needs more pizzles.
Yeah, that's right.
That's what we gave him tonight. It's like, what, you're chewing on a table leg? Here's a pizzle. Here you go.
Well, cool. Guys, it's been really great talking with you, and we don't have to stop, but it has been a while, and it was just supposed to be a fun, chit-chatty show. Anything else you guys want to talk about?
I did have a question about the book.
Yeah.
We still want to talk about it a little bit. But so there's a definite jump in terms of from the previous book to this one. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So what do you think the biggest transition as far as like learning, you know, some culinary arts or whatever as you progress? Like what is the thing you're most proud of as far as learning new things with this?
So that's a really good question. And I think I'm going to give a really bad answer. Which is that, I mean, of course we've learned and we've grown over the past year that we, you know, went from doing Eat Like a Dinosaur to doing Beyond Bacon, but the most significant differences are twofold. One, it was a completely intended to be different audience. Like, we intentionally wrote Eat Like a Dinosaur to be very simple recipes that families could do together. and so as far as recipes, all of these recipes can appear on our blog. Like, we've got recipes from Eat Like a Dinosaur on our blog, and we've got recipes from Beyond Bacon on our blog. They're all how we cook every day. It's just a matter of like how we present it to different audiences. But I think the biggest difference and the shocker for people is that we took the design elements and the artistic elements of the things that we did so carefully for Eat Like a Dinosaur, we did them for children. We did them with the mindset of like looking through a children's eyes, what would be exciting. And with Beyond Bacon, we did it for grownups. Like, we did it like, what cookbook would we want to buy? And I actually went to my favorite cookbooks that were on my bookshelf, and I looked at them and I said, these are my favorite elements of these cookbooks. And this is why, like, for example, one of the unique things about Beyond Bacon is that the title is not at the top of the page. It's at the middle of the page. And that was really intentionally done because my favorite cookbook, design-wise, I realized that the title was in the middle of the book, and it made it flow so much better for me when I was reading it, and I really enjoyed that element. And so I incorporated that into Beyond Bacon. So I think it's definitely really jarring for people to see the two of them and see how different they are. But I think for me, I look at both of them as just being different elements of who we are, right? Like, the Eat Like a Dinosaur is our kids' version, and then the Beyond Bacon is the grown-up version. Like, we watch Top Chef, we watch Iron Chef, we watch, you know, all those kinds of shows because we're really into them, and that's the genre that we're kind of speaking to with Beyond Bacon. And honestly, we never could have pulled off anything like that ourselves without Amy. Like, there's no way we could have made like the design elements couldn't have been as simple and elegant as they are if the photographs weren't so amazing. And so with Eat Like a Dinosaur, we purposely shrunk the photo. I'm not going to lie to you. The photos are small on the page for a reason. I know that my photography was not great. And I knew that, you know, I needed to come up with graphics and design that would really be catchy for children's eyes and things that they were interested in. And so it's just the difference of mindset of, you know, what the intentions were and
right.
that sort of thing.
Well, you know, I already wrote my review, but I just love it so much. I mean, I think that
yeah.
I love looking at the recipes and be like, well, and then, you know, kind of taking my own look at it and be like, well, how would I approach it? You know, and you kind of nailed it with almost every single one exactly how I would do it. You know, and that's to me, like, that's the coolest thing about a cookbook is it's, you know, it's perfect, exactly what I would want. So
thank you.
It's cool.
It means a lot too, because I know that there's a few recipes in there that you were kind of like holding your breath on, like Schweinsbach. You told
yeah.
me, like you, one of the first things that you did when you got the PDF is you checked out that recipe and you were like,
right.
oh good, you did it right.
yeah.
We certainly did a lot of research on the dishes that we did that were traditional or, ethnic cuisine type dishes. We did our research because we wanted to make sure that, you know, we were being respectful and doing it right. And
right.
We had a whole family who is, I think, Mexican heritage, and they eat chorizo regularly, and she's never made it herself. And she knows that when she buys it, it doesn't have the best ingredients, but she said, like, it's just her family loves chorizo, and so they buy it anyway, and that's their mm-hmm. thing and whatever. And so when we read her review, like, again, I got teary-eyed because she said that she went to make the recipe. She had to go to several different Mexican, like, grocery stores in order to gather the ingredients. And I think she ended up going to an Asian food market, which is what we recommend. It's where we found all the ingredients. And she says she's reading the instructions, and we tell people use gloves and don't do this recipe when there are people with autoimmune conditions nearby, because it could inflame their system enough. Like, for me, I had to actually leave the house when Matt made this recipe, because the toxins that go into the air actually inflame my system. So anyway, we give instructions in the book, like, be serious about this, use gloves, be careful, blah, blah, blah. And the paste that it makes for the sausage is bright red. It is like crazy red. Mm-hmm. And she said when she was making it that she got really nervous. Like halfway through, she was like, oh my gosh, I don't even think I should eat this. I don't think this has gone too far, you know, and she got a little nervous and hesitant, but she fried them up anyway. And, she said she like took one bite with a glass of water in her other hand, like anticipating needing to not eat it. And she said it was just amazing. It was perfect. It was exactly as it should have been. And like now she's so grateful that she has her own recipe to make like what she called authentic chorizo. And there's nothing like Matt and I are mutts from Eastern Europe, you know, like we are nowhere near knowing anything about chorizo and Mexican cuisine. So the fact that, you know, we did our research and we tested recipes until we got it right. And someone else says, yeah, this is exactly what it should be. And like you just said, Russ, like you went through and you thought, how would I do it? And you said, yes, like that's what everybody, that's what every cookbook author wants to hear.
So, right.
Yeah,
right.
That's great.
Thank you for making the book.
Now everybody has all these like inside scoops on all the different recipes.
Oh. Awesome.
Yeah. So cool. Well, I'm really looking forward to seeing three quarters of you 1 week from now. So
yeah, we're excited.
Jeez, that's coming up fast. I might be able to make it.
You better get on rendering your lard and finishing up that blog post so you can get here, Bill.
That's right.
And I'll promise you brownies if you come.
Oh, okay.
That's worth it.
Oh, done.
Never mind, I'm done.
There's lard fries and brownies. So
that'll do.
Cool. Well, I hope that this show also kind of dispels for people a lot of the other stuff that we've been talking about, because the book has been getting a lot of talk about snout to tail, and it having head cheese and it having some of those sort of things in it. And I hope that people understand that this book is 95%, you know, food real that people would normally eat, because that's the kind of meat that's on an animal. It's muscle meat and it's bones and it's fat for the most part. And there are some organ meats and, you know, we were respectful of the animal and cooking those organ meats and we're really proud of that. But there's also, if you aren't comfortable with that, plenty of recipes to not have to go into mm-hmm. those sort of things if you're not interested. So mm-hmm. hopefully hearing about all these different kinds of yummy recipes without any sort of weird animal parts in them makes people more comfortable. Cool.
Sorry, I probably pet you did that because I did my video review and that was, of course, like the first page I flipped to. With
your video review was so cute. We're like, we're just going to keep moving on. Lear, let me show you the rest of the desserts.
There's a brownie.
Cool. Well, it was awesome having you guys on. Thank you for taking the time and being our buds and being so supportive. I honestly feel like I have long distance family within the paleo mm-hmm. community, and you guys are definitely on that list. So thanks a lot.
Yeah. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, it was a good time.
Awesome. We'll talk to you guys later.
Okay. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
I wish I could come. It sounds like so much fun.
You should come.
I can't.
That's what I said to Sarah and it worked.
Yeah. I was so much fun. I wish I could come. And Stacey said, why don't you? So I'm just saying...
Sarah's telling me I need to text her.
Text her?
Sarah's a type A personality and she can't just let me explain this to you without telling me into my ear what I need to be telling you.
Okay, I'll put myself on mute. That way you can't hear me.